All right, we're doing the Brain Trust podcast, and I'm Adam Vass, a tabletop game designer in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And I'm Will, tabletop game designer in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Adam, what's up?
You know, just recording the podcast like we do each and every week and giving all of our classic insights into the role-playing game design world as we do every week.
It's another week of the Brain Trust podcast. We're coming back again once in your feed again this month for the fourth or fifth time. Should we just do a recap of the last couple episodes that we did? So I guess the you know, you'll remember some of our famous March episodes, like when we explained what Lyra games were.
Yeah, we did the March Madness bracket where we compiled every game we ever made on the podcast and battled them against each other.
That was a really fun episode. Tied with the live stream, I couldn't imagine a more fun way to bring in March Madness.
Yeah, I love interacting with all our fans in real time, getting to, you know, vibe together.
There was the experimental limited play Blades in the Dark campaign that we ran in the metaverse, which was really great. I mean, that's just going to be a piece of content. It's hard going back to just kind of 2D content like this.
Yeah, I think, you know, the days of Roll20 and virtual tabletops are really over now that we can literally rob places in the metaverse. It's just so much more immersive.
The PayPal heist will go down as one of the best RPG campaigns you can play in this this decade. Who can forget when we raised $1.5 million on Kickstarter?
No one. No one could
just
forget.
Just a huge campaign for us.
Yeah, just for the podcast. That's how we're able to keep coming back week after week and giving y'all what you're after here on the Brain Trust podcast.
And so we're going to have to dial it back a little bit as we kind of get back to normal. But it's just been an awesome month recording this podcast with you, buddy.
It's one of the treasures I'll look back on my deathbed, March 2022, and all of the creativity and success that we had together.
All of the awesome pods, and it was so great getting up there on the Oscars stage to accept some of the first. It's, you know, kind of no reason why you would have heard about that part in particular, but it, you know, it was a part of that night. So anyway, what you've been up to? What's going on?
Cyber Metal 2012 is in layout now. I did like a dozen pages this morning before this call. It's looking sharp.
It's a great game. I edited it, and it is just I want to play like a mega city-spanning campaign in it.
And this was my first time having you be my editor, and it's paying infinite dividends.
Hey, that's great.
Feels good. Feels like, I know other people have said this about your edit, but like you're having a not real-time conversation in the notes, and it's very approachable, and it helps me like think about it in that way and not just kind of sterile tags of things that are wrong.
Yeah, thank you. It's like, I really like editing that way because I just get to be like a colleague and just hang out at the level of like, yeah, I get to cosplay as a reader and a player and a designer and just whatever I can to help.
And you, of course, have released Torque.
Torque Rally Raid Roleplaying is out. You can get Torque now at goodluckpress.co. It's out. It's huge. People are loving it. I am just ticking down things on the Torque roadmap as we move on, including getting up a text version, getting up a card version that'll be free for everybody, and then running a Torque jam, which I've already heard some ideas for it. Last night, Adam Bell in the Good Luck Press Discord said the Torque de France, so that's so fucking excited for that. Finally, Adam Bell is adding track standing into a role-playing game, which he's been threatening to do for months. But yeah, it feels awesome, and I'm just knocking out some editing commitments before getting the intro adventure that'll be free for everybody called Half Hardcore up. That'll be the first episode in a like free arc of episodes that people can play. And I had some really cool streamer reach out and be like, hey, we're going to speed run this. Nice. How do we start the time? Like, when does time start? And I got to like flex my speed run know-how and be like, yeah, this is an IGT run. This is in-game time. You only start when you're playing, which was fun. And I like that because like you should have the fun of making characters and figuring out all your narrative ammo, because a whole part of Torque is that you have to do a move, you have to describe how you're doing your stunt or your attack or your move or whatever. So kind of getting a bandolier of descriptions is a part of the speed run, which is really cool.
Yeah, that sounds like it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. If you want to speed run Torque, hit me up. I will make you like custom overlays to use for your stream. And if you just want to come play Torque, come hang on the Good Luck Press Discord. I'll run some shit in the Brain Trust too. That'd be great.
Hell yeah.
And you have a Kickstarter coming up by time of record this week.
Yes. Regrettably, I am back on the on the internet. I'm bringing up Soul Burner, which is a dark fantasy fire torched mess of a memory revenge quest. Those of you familiar with Necronautilus are gonna feel well at home here, and it's compatible with Morkborg. It's sort of like putting those two in a blender and seeing what comes out. So you play
it's
as
the Reese's cup of
yeah you got your Morkborg and my Necronautilus. You play as heretics that were burned at the stake, and your soul is stuck in a heap of ash, and you explore this like volcanic world trying to figure out who burned you and why, and who you were before and what you want to be. And sometimes that involves turning your head into a mace and swinging your neck around to do attacks.
I really liked your tweets about Soul Burner. Yeah. They have been some of my favorite.
You can turn into a sword.
Yeah, that's great.
What else do you want? That's the end of my marketing. You can turn into sword.
I like how it's kind of how I think of characters for games like D&D, that I just want to be the most like weird concept character. Like recently I played, not recently, oh my god, before the pandemic, I played a suit of armor that was an aquarium with two eels in it, and that was my guy. Amazing. And it's just kind of the yeah, it was called Angel and Deville, you know, two sides. Anyway, that just, you know, Soul Burner feels like exactly the kind of thing where I would want to be a smart sword, working through my burn book.
Yeah, and it's bringing in some of those themes of like subjective memory and infallible memory that are in Necronautilus. So like as you play and your memories emerge, like you might have the face of a loved one like replace your shoulder. And so now your arm is like, whenever you move your arm, you're manipulating this face of someone that you loved when you were alive, and they can speak to you. And there's just all these, yeah, all these weird, this sort of idea that, what's that, the trauma phrase, like the body remembers or the body never forgets or something, like,
right.
It's that in a very literal sense of all heavy of your metal. History yeah. exists in your body and manifests itself. So it's going to be some fun little body horror weirdness going on.
Welcome to trauma-informed black metal role-playing.
If that doesn't check every box, I pack it up.
Hell yeah. You know, it just goes to show that we are the goats. Yeah, so in April, we will also be working on... This is just now kind of a stakeholder report, I guess. Discord has ghosts in it, manuscripts done, we have a lot of the writing in, and so we'll be working getting illustrations and also playtesting a lot of the cool new weird stuff that's in the game. So that'll be April, May, and then I guess Adam and I are working on the Pochemon game.
Yeah, I hope.
I would love to.
It seems impossible right now.
Yeah, it is rough. I basically destroyed my transmission gear shifting from fulfilling Torque to immediately doing a ton of freelance.
Yeah.
And I just want to be like working on the monster truck manual, which is
that's great. Like,
yeah. And doing stuff like that. But, you know, that's just how it goes. I knew this was going to be a biggest time. Speaking of awesome freelance projects, Nevin Holmes's Justicar is on Kickstarter right now. It's like your My Cousin Vinny X, Ace Attorney X, Legally Blonde courtroom drama that I have the pleasure to edit. So that is on Kickstarter right now. Go check it out.
While you were listing those, I was trying to think of what my courtroom drama of choice might be. And unfortunately, I came up with JFK and the movie and that one episode of It's Always Sunny where they hired Charlie's uncle who's wearing like Hulk hands. So
it's gotta be Better Call Saul for me.
Oh yeah, I got yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how I didn't get there first.
Bob Odenkirk
back and to the left.
The goat. when he is
to the left.
The first episode where he's being a public defendant for the kids and you don't know what the kids do until the end of the episode and he just gets worse and worse and worse until he figured out they did some necrophilia shit. Yeah, beautiful. Better Call Saul is way better than Breaking Bad.
Yeah, and Breaking Bad is in my top five all-timers. So Better Call Saul, I guess, is in the top four at least.
So I am, speaking of all-timers, I'm rewatching Lost, and it's amazing.
We need a stinger for when we talk about Lost on the show.
We just do the... my new bit when Seb and I watch Lost is we watch on Disney Plus, and it will be like the last time on Lost, and it will be like, you know, John Locke falling down, and Desmond will be like shaking or something, and then we'll skip it, and then the title sequence comes on, and as you know, it's about 4.5 seconds long, and as the weirdly JPEG artifacted, like, fucking... I don't know what 3D rendering program... Were they using, like, Maya in 2008? Like the Maya rendered Lost title just kind of careening, doing a little drift. I always say like, hey, do you want me to skip this? And then just like, just kind of my bit. But I love Lost. It is so good. Yeah, it's still really good. I really hate Jack and Kate. And then I just enjoy the rest of the show.
Yeah, I think that's something that comes with repeated viewings, is the sort of rejection of the lens that they offer you.
It's like a absolute full body rejection of like, not only is Zach, what's his name? His
Matthew
name
Fox?
Is like Matthew Fox. He's like a bad guy. He's like a fucked up dude who sucks. But his character is such, like, a controlling, emotionally abusive, manipulative freak.
Absolutely. And they present him as the hero.
Yeah, it's wild. Like, clearly everyone else is the hero. Anyway, Lost stays good. That's just what I gotta say.
Yeah. My palms were getting sweaty at the idea that we were gonna design another Lost game on the show today.
I have one like in my phone notes. If was that a good palm sweaty or a?
It's just sweat, you know. The
doesn't gotta be anything.
It doesn't have feelings. It's subjective. It's interpretationable. Interpretable.
Something we can talk about today is that Nevin brought up a great question in general, which is. What fantasy creature could you absolutely take in a fight? I was wondering, now that, you know, Soul Burner's coming up, you're going to be fighting some fantasy creatures nowadays.
Yeah.
What, you as AV, who could you take?
I mean, my first inclination is a Mimic.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just like a box.
You've already mastered yourself.
Or some shit. Just like, I just don't open the box. The end.
I gotta say, not opening the box is notoriously one of the hardest things to do. Something that, throughout myth and story, people have struggled with. Yeah, I'm not Pandora. I'm built different.
I see a different box. Culture. It's closed. I leave it closed.
It's not for me. I said in the chat that I would easily take a rust monster. I use very little metal in my day-to-day, so I would just be able to basically just squish a rust monster into kind of a pate. That's what I would do.
I'm trying to think if what else, some other classics that I could body.
Goblin. I could take a goblin.
I would powerbomb a goblin through a table, no hesitation.
I feel like fighting a goblin would be really fun. Like, it would be fucking... like wrestling as a kid. Yeah. Like, kind of like that.
Like ragdoll.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I could take on... I'm thinking of, like... Are you familiar with the Hounds of Tyndalos from Lovecraft lore?
I'm not.
So they're these, like, weird dogs that appear in... they can jump out at you at acute angles. So, like, if you live somewhere that has acute angles and you are dealing with, like, mythos stuff, a Hound of Tyndalos is going to come through time and jump out of the acute angle and get you.
Okay.
And I think I can easily shift to an obtuse lifestyle. I think that that's kind of easy for me. if not living an obtuse lifestyle mentally, I can change my physical. It means books are kind of out for me. I can't use a laptop anymore because the dog might jump out. But I think I could set up at my single acute angle somewhere in my apartment where I could easily just hit the freaking time dog with my guitar or something.
So here's an interesting issue, right? I'm next to my inventory closet, and the door is open at an obtuse angle. But in doing so, the other side of the door is now acute.
Yeah.
Do you have to live at perpendicular lifestyle?
Oh, it might be just perpendicular.
Only perps.
Well, so if you live in the Oval Office...
Oh, no angles.
That's got to be one of the safest places, vis-a-vis Hounds of Tyndalos.
Maybe that's why it's that way.
It's dog-proof. Didn't Biden have one of those dogs that bites people?
Biden. Yeah, that's Biden. President Biden. That's what they call the dog.
But the dog, like, I forget the name of the dog. Look, I don't live there anymore. I don't gotta know the name of the fucking dogs, okay? But, yeah, I think those are probably some, you know, those dogs don't go in the Oval Office because of the Hounds of Tyndalos rule. Any other kind of, like, maybe not fantasy monster, but maybe, like, classic Hollywood monster you could take?
So the creature from the Black Lagoon...
Oh, my God.
Because I don't swim, so we're never crossing paths, dude.
But
here's my whole thing I'm realizing is avoidance, conflict avoidance.
Yeah, you're like, oh, the It Follows freak is following me. I'm just a little bit faster. I got one of those.
You can't lose if you don't play, you know?
I've got a hoverboard from 2017 that has a pre-explosion hoverboard that I'm going to get. I could take on Creature from the Black Lagoon is easy. I just shallow water. That guy is out, right? Like,
yeah, I'm pretty sure that he can't hang out outside of water for very long, if at all.
Yeah. Wouldn't want to fight the wolf man.
Nah.
That's an L. That's an easy L for me.
Yeah.
I'm basically made for like a werewolf to just put, make me into confetti, basically. That's what I think would happen.
Yeah, you know, there aren't, truthfully, a lot of monsters I could take. And I know this about myself, and I'm just going to be honest here.
Unless they're small. Like, I could defeat every red wall monster.
Flubber.
Yeah, I don't think I could beat Flubber.
I feel like you just gotta contain it, right?
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. Like, Flubber is uncontainable. Like, what if Flubber jumped in your mouth? Like, let's, what, like, make a Shudder reboot of Flubber. That thing is gruesomely killing.
Speaking of fantasy and Shudder, Spine of the Night came out about a week ago, and it is one of the best movies I've seen this year.
Oh, nice.
It's awesome. It's just a rotoscoped, traditional fantasy cartoon in the style of, like, heavy metal movies. And it just ruled. It was super fun. It's got extreme gore, but it's a cartoon, so it, like, it doesn't really hit. Or, it, you know, it doesn't mess you up. Just a good fantasy story. It's the kind of fantasy I like, where it's like one person has magic and everyone agrees that they're evil for having magic.
I like that.
And you just need a really strong guy or something to get there.
Spine of the Night. I have to check that out. I've been on a good movie streak after some bad ones. I think, like, not even bad ones, but just, like, long, not awesome movies I've been watching a lot.
Yeah, I've had my fair share of those lately, too.
It's just the dark ages. Now I'm back, watched The Last Duel into Magic Mike, and it's just, like, they're both so good. Have you seen Magic Mike yet? It is amazing. Yeah, it's not just about Channing Tatum being very hot, but that's fine. Like, it's super funny, it's super good, it's a little rough. It's great. Matthew McConaughey is in it.
I think Joe Manganiello is in it, who is also in Spine of the Night. So,
oh,
we got a little bridge.
We got there. Should we take a break and then come back and talk about something
else?
Yeah,
let's do games.
Games.
It's hard because it's like I'm rejecting the development, but it's one of the more fun things that we do.
Yeah, I think we just, I mean, we're both working on designing different stuff right now, so we can just talk about that.
Processes and...
Yeah.
So let's just leave this part in.
Okay, and we're back.
You are working on a new game, among many, as we all always are.
Everywhere, all the time.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about, or is it too early to talk about,
I can definitely
Big Grave?
Talk about it. Yeah, Big Grave, fashion fantasy. I'm already doing my guerrilla marketing thing. Did you make a real friend or just guerrilla marketing? Monkey from cartoon. Do you know that meme? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
It's Donnie Darko talking to his therapist, and he says, I made a new friend today. And the therapist said, real or monkey from TV? And Donnie Darko has a thought bubble of a monkey, and he says, monkey from TV. Yeah, it's a game where your power is directly tied to how stylish you are. It's a game where you're collecting different pieces of fashion and style and making your own cool personal style while existing in a cool, strange, eclectic city and going on different cool events and dates and meeting people and being part of a clique. In the game, you're an icon who's new to a city that is called a Big Grave. The city you all create together based on some real world city, but you make it strange enough and weird enough that, it has no, you know, like one to one, but you can still hop on Google Maps and find a cool park to hang out at.
Cool.
But Yeah, you go and compete in different events that are rated different stars. So you could go to a 5-star gala and just strut your fashion in this kind of cool. It's not kind of cool. It's definitely cool. This rock, paper, scissors style interaction between the three styles of fashion, which are hot, like hot couture, freak, which is everything weird and bulbous and organic and strange, and ultra, which is super sleek, futuristic, technologic. And those all, you build your look loadout. You've got these four slots, which are your big, your pop, your over, and your under. Your big is the thing people notice first about you. Your pop is what ties it all together. Your over is kind of something that represents your overall look, and your under is what's closest to you. So you build a loadout, and each one of your abilities is tied to items in that loadout. And yeah, you go and compete events together as a clique or solo. Events can be anything. Like the playtest event I have right now is you go to a boardwalk and go to the different cutouts and just have a cool day looking like big muscle men or mermaids. And then it culminates with you going to an arcade and setting high scores on all the machines. And then the stylish regulars come in, and then you have a, you know, DDR X-Men, the arcade game style battle against them. So it's super fun to design. I'm done writing it, and it just needs play testing. And the way I want to put it out is by doing a open beta where people will just get access to some card rules that will only be live for, you know, like 2 weeks at a time. And I will go back and then tweak it and then open it again. And I will be able to like release new items and stuff like that all through the Discord. So yeah, it seems good from where I'm at.
Brain Trust Originals will recognize this one as one of the 10 that we were battling to before,
yeah.
To figure out what the hell game we were going to make at the start of this. It also sounds like it's come a long way, or it's changed quite a bit from the sort of like Destiny Hyperlight. Did you have an arc where it was like a combat game that became a hangout game, or was it just from Destiny and Hyperlight the things that you took were like gadget builds?
Yeah, so you can interpret the events to be just fights. So the way the game works on this modular basis where you are doing this rock, paper, scissors style interaction to build chunks of a star, and if you complete the star or enough stars or eliminate the opponent's star, things like this, you succeed in the event and you get some loot that you put on the rack, and then at the end of the runway, which is a bunch of connected events, you roll on the rack and get a bunch of stuff. So you could easily just make it your Destiny going to do an end raid, or, you know, Hyperlight style fighting a freaky eldritch boss. And I want it to be open enough that you can play like a completely, you know, one of the examples is that you are a bunch of spaceships tied together in a dead nebula at the last remnants of humanity in the whole universe, and you look good. But yeah, I wanted to see if I could make the playtest all hanging out and learning about a city and stuff. But
that's cool.
The idea is that you can play Big Grave, which is this kind of idea of a somewhat non-violent hangout style-based thing, but you can put fashion fantasy into any game that you're already playing.
Yeah, I experimented with this a little bit in Cybermetal 2, the idea that like conflict resolution is not, it's quantifiable, but it's not always damage-based. Like,
yeah,
you can play a game of skate, or you can do like a drag ball, and the way that you're still doing skill checks and you're still competing with charge, like your battery level, in the same way that like if somebody serves you in a dance battle, it's going to sting your ego the same way as like getting stuck with a shiv is going to hurt your physical body.
Yeah, totally. And the way that the fashion is built up in Big Grave is that it never tells you what the piece of clothing is. It just describes it in a few words. So you can basically make your item that might be like glimmering and salt tinged, you could make that into a sword that's made out of a deep sea anchor or something like that, and then that's part of your fashion. Or, you know, you could go the other way and something that's like matte black and spiky could be some really wild platform shoes that you're wearing to a gala or whatever.
A thing that you do in a lot of your games that's really interesting to me is this, like, sensory evocation that's often visual, but it makes me always want to, like, draw while playing. Like, I want to draw my character's thing, or I want to draw my car and Torque. And I think I tend to do the opposite. Like, I want you to have really vivid descriptions where the words and the language and, like, the mouthfeel of saying things is the appeal. I think what I get from a lot of your games or playing your games is seeing the stuff in my head.
Nice. That is such a good compliment. Thank you. Yeah, it's for Big Grave, it's a easy choice because I'm not ever going to be able to know what style people are thinking of. And also because one time I did a very early playtest of this game a few years ago where I had Hawaiian shirt as one of the items, and a player got it and just couldn't stop laughing. It's like, that's not really a feature, IMO. So yeah, the kind of cool gestural thing, you know, I think you tap into this with using words and discovering things out of getting into the micro about how words relate to each other. And it's, I love it in RPGs where you can get someone to think of something without telling them what to think about.
Yeah.
And because this is like how all the campfire prompts work.
Right.
Like, we design the prompt with like six things in mind, and someone's always going to have something that is a result of that. And it's going to be more interesting.
And there's always people bringing something, like, because everyone has their own media literacy and all that, like, people will always surprise us, even with however much intent we put into those prompts and designs and stuff. There's always going to be like a new interpretation we could have never planned for.
Yeah, and the secret of those prompts is that the kind of card setup, the spark, has enough details that you can't get any of them wrong, and you're set up to have like an exciting precipice to stand on where every place you could jump to is interesting. No matter what.
Yeah. Game design can rule sometimes.
Can rule. I think the way we do it rules, gonna say.
Yeah. I think my hesitation there is from starting another full book while my last book's not done.
Oh my god. Yeah, it's
huge mistake. But I, for whatever reason, I really wanted to launch Soulburner for my birthday, which is soon. I'm like weird about like people I don't know what my birthday is.
Sure. That's,
I deleted my Facebook on my birthday in like 2010 because I was getting notifications from people I didn't really know saying happy birthday, and it made me wildly uncomfortable.
So that whole tradition of saying happy birthday on your birthday in Facebook is now like the last people at a closing bar that are just like kind of saying like, hey, how are you doing? So like the only people that say happy birthday on mine anymore are people I do not talk to and never did, or my guitar teacher asking if I still have the same cell phone number.
But yeah, Soulburner's launch was coinciding with my birthday so that I could get people to give me money. I needed the money, really. It was a rush.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really common way of structuring these things, that you're going to have dead periods where you need to work on, what are you going to do, right?
Yeah. So. But that said, like, both games are exciting. Cyber Metal is, like, done enough that I'm not worried about, like, mentally crossing streams here.
Totally.
As I mentioned, it's already in layout, and it looks cool, and it's a very visual experiment, whereas Soulburner is still in that, like, mechanical phase of trying to figure out how to get people to do or have the experience I want it to evoke and how it feels to play. And it's interesting too. I think this might be the first time, if not just in a while, that I'm using a different system. Like I'm using the Morkborg core system.
Yeah.
And that's really strange, but it's cool. Like it's almost harder for me to go from a built foundation than to go from scratch, because I have to make the peg fit in the hole instead of building the hole to suit the peg.
It's a different kind of challenge, because making your whole system, you know everything it's capable of, and everything you make for it kind of takes it to that limit, and you start to just benchmark things on. That's why I love making new things, because I love learning new weird systems and games that are really tied directly to the system. But yeah, I totally see the appeal otherwise.
Yeah, I love system design, but I also find it's maybe the single hardest thing to find an audience for.
Yeah.
Because I do agree it makes the game hardier and more stable when everything's connected in those ways. But it's a lot harder to sell. It's a lot harder to, like, get people interested in. Whereas, you know, if you have a cool aesthetic or theme or setting and it's something that people are already familiar with, like, that's an easier hook for a lot of people. So
yeah, totally.
It's a struggle because it comes back to, like, who are we making art for?
Yeah.
And the answer is almost always ourselves, but it's also our audience. And, like, true success, I guess, is when your audience just lets you be yourself.
Yeah.
But the indie game world isn't that big. Like, it's not something where everyone can do whatever they want and find an audience for it on their own and make enough that they're not torn asunder by responsibilities and obligations and all that.
Yeah, I find also that the more I do my own system design, the more, like, brutally simple I make things. Like, I try and find the absolute most simplistic and elegant way to make something. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, a kind of chunkiness and sloppiness is a part of the design, which is important. And not to say things that are long or labyrinthine are sloppy, but just my tastes now are closer to that. So, you know, you can definitely find a lot of success with making things as just simple and easy to grasp and explainable. But yeah, that's the eternal question. I think I will be making new systems as long as I can do it. And, you know, I think that the way that we do it, which is by creating the narrative elements, mechanical elements in the same sentence, like, they are so tied together that it's not as much as, like, oh, I'm learning a generic system and I'm going to play an adventure in it. It's like, I am going on an adventure across this region with little freaky friends.
Yeah.
And here's what the freaky friends are like, and here's what I'm like, and here's what the region is like. You know, like, Necronautilus, just to take an example, couldn't really be anything else.
Right. Yeah.
And Cobwebs couldn't really be anything else. Yeah.
The themes are tied into the mechanics and the narrative elements, and they're all, like, locked together. And I think that's a benefit of the game. Like, they make the game work better. But, yeah, like you said, it makes it a little bit less universal. I was just thinking while you were talking, too, of how there's not this expectation in video games.
No, right? Like, yeah.
I'm just thinking of, like, we kind of take for granted the idea that, like, X is jump. But sometimes you get a game and triangle is jump. And you're like, okay, that's fine. I will just learn how to play this game because it's the X must be, like, a higher priority action than jump.
Like, or like how absolutely wild it is to jump on your hat in Mario. Like how of a kind of operation style surgical maneuver it is to get one of those super jumps. Yeah, I think that something that happens with video games is that because it is just a much more like healthy medium where people are making stuff all the time and people are buying stuff all the time, there is a shorthand that's a little bit more usable for video gamers. You know, if something's a first-person shooter, it's going to have some stuff in common. If something's a action RPG, it's going to have stuff in common. And I think we find stuff like that for RPGs, like Torque being a tactical game. People get a certain idea of what that is, and some a cheat for tactical stuff is that everyone knows that it's going to be a little bit different in particular. Like, its particularities are a feature of tactical systems. Or just like a super light NSR game. You don't know how things work, but you have an idea of the shapes that they'll take when you're in it.
Yeah, it's interesting because tabletop is so diverse in that way, and everyone, like I said, has their own kind of perspective, that even saying like a fantasy adventure game, it does, I do expect that I'm gonna hold a sword, but like how and why and where are things that we like can't take for granted. Like every game is gonna give its own answers to those questions.
Yeah, I've just been working through this edit right now, and I came across something that like made me think of a concept of like mechanical bleed, and how some words have such strong associations with game concepts that move in Apocalypse World has nothing to do with physically moving around a space.
Yeah.
Or an action is really like a traditional game vibe where you have an action and you understand that an action is actually subdivided or something.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. I think there exists too, like so many well thought out and put together like core studies of this. Like, you know, if we were building a platformer, we can put our own theme on, we can put our own, like, story on, but the game is effectively, like, D-pad and jumping, and maybe double jumping. Those are those, like, one-page RP, like, fantasy games, like Cairn or something, to me. And then you can, of course, expand on that, like, turning Mario, Super Mario Brothers into Mario 64. It still has platformer DNA, but it's such a more... And then, like you said, with jumping on your hat in Odyssey or something, like those are the sort of wider evolutions of a fantasy role-playing game that come from the same root. And then you also have the sort of like retro gamey attitude of people who are making games that more closely emulate the original experience.
Yeah, like a platformer analog will be like, I want to be the guy, which is a massacre. Are you familiar with this genre of massacre platformers?
No.
It's like you're a masochist, so you play this brutally difficult, not good to look at, but very rewarding platformer that breaks a lot of its own rules and stuff like that. Some pretty good speedruns of I Want to Be the Guy. But yeah, I think the Mario metaphor is really good because one day, you know, you'll have your D&D character voiced by Matt Mercer, which in this case is Chris Pratt for Mario. So, I mean, a lot of it is just really just right there. But yeah, with RPGs, I think there's just so much of it. It's just getting past D&D. And we're, you know, this is like the eternal fight. That board games doesn't have this problem that there's no Monopoly likes or, you know, like, but, you know, every day we stray further away from the shadow of Dungeons and Dragons, which is great. And, you know, Soul Burner coming to Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't think this might be my first real deal fantasy game. I'm trying to think. I'm pretty sure I did like Four Skulls. It's like a little zine thing. And I just did it for patrons. I didn't release it. I guess I did my Saint Anger game that's about killing stuff with swords. But like this is sort of, I guess this is my first approach towards, air quote, fantasy.
Hell yeah. Do you have hit points in it?
That's a good question. I do not have an answer.
That's something that feels like a secret line for me, is that I haven't made a game with hit points in it yet. I have made, Torque has horsepower, which is shortened to HP, and that's not the same. But yeah, it makes me think, like, you know, am I going to need that tool in my toolkit?
Right.
You know, when do I get to open that one, that bloody shelf in my toolkit?
Soulburner has that interesting dilemma that's present in Necronautilus 2, that your character has already died before you start playing.
I love it.
So, like, measuring health isn't exactly what you're doing. And if you're already dead, then, like, what is it when you have no vitality left? Like, it's not death. It's something else. So that is, I think instead of HP, it will be, like, mass or, like, some other measure of how much ash there is, where you can reach zero and then, like, you know, the wind will carry some of you away, but you'll come back to the fight just, that's like, great, sort of slightly changed.
Just go back to that Google Doc we made of every fire-related word for campfire to see what you're going to name it.
A major part of my process now is just making, like, word clouds.
Word clouds are great for Big Grave. I utilize some of the procedural generation stuff to make events and to make items and stuff. So, yeah, letting your brain make stuff for you is the best. It's so good.
I still go back often to the Ether Operations word vomit because that game was just so weird. I can use those words in a lot of other stuff.
Nice.
I just released Chain Face. My character adventure zine that's, you can put in any system. And it comes preloaded with both Necronautilus and Torque, as well as Morkborg and Spencer Campbell's Nova. But I needed a system by which Chain Face could generate adventure hooks and enemies and stuff, and I went back to the Ether Operations word list and was like, oh yeah, you know, heretic is a cool word or whatever, and just built stuff out of that. So it sort of works in any setting, but it's still imbued with that kind of signature Adam Vass language.
Yeah. Chain Face is such a good zine. People should go get it. It is so cool. Like, conceptually it's awesome, but then in practice it is so fucking awesome.
It was so much fun to make too. And Vitatia Valetti said something cool too, like the idea of an adventure that is presented as just like a character, right? Because Chain Face I guess isn't there for you to be. You don't play as Chain Face, but the way that he can be integrated in your stories in whatever game you're playing opens up so many hooks. He can be your villain. He could be in pursuit of your villain that ends up like having him fight alongside your heroes or whatever. He has a key that opens up doors to other dimensions. So, you know, you could be playing Mouse Ritter and walk through the dimension door and then start playing Mutant Crawl Classics.
Beautiful.
And that's in an 8-page zine that I just made on a Saturday, like taking pictures of myself wrapped in chains and photoshopping them to hell. So it was so much fun. And like, it came at the right time too, where I just needed a fun project.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you pushed the art of role-playing game design further as you do it. So that's just the negative side effect of doing a personal project. Hell yeah, Chain Face. That'd be a cool, like, do add-ons anymore? Is that a thing?
For, like, crowdfunding?
Yeah.
Well, I did with Cyber Metal, but it, I wouldn't say that it was wise.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway, yeah, Soulburner, go check it out. You have a dying.day.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah. I'm glad I got it right.
Yeah. I That's one I think I'll use for the duration, and then I'll see if I can sell it, because, like, I can't believe I got it.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Just, there's got to be a metal band with that.
Yeah,
name,
I was thinking a metal band, or, like, actually, like, funerary services or something. Like,
like will.com?
Yeah, like, you don't want to be unprepared for your dying dot day.
Yeah, that fucking rocks. Cool. I mean, what else do you want to talk about?
Shit.
Shit. We need 5 more minutes.
Let's see. I mean, so much. There's so much going on, but at the same time, it's like I'm in the throes of. We mentioned procedural generation. I have another procedural game coming up. Roll for Clues. Roll for Clues is. I have it in print in hand. I just didn't want to, like, I've been doing so much stuff, and I kind of want to let some of it breathe. Like, I didn't want to do Chain Face and Roll for Clues in 1 week.
Yeah, totally.
Which is an interesting indie RPG problem, to have too many projects.
Too much. Well, you know, I found that if you just kind of talk about one thing for long enough, and then eventually release it, people will go wild. For it. So yeah, Roll for Clues, which we made on this podcast for the Games Jam, which it ended, but there's a bunch of cool fucking submissions that you can still go check out. I'll link it in the podcast. Some really cool stuff came out of that, so thanks everybody. I think it's about time for another tech jam too, so we'll have to figure out what to do for that.
Rad. I have a secret, like a unlisted listing for Roll for Clues that I submitted to Games Jam so that so that it would be there when I decide to make it public. So maybe I'll try to do that before this podcast goes up.
Yeah, or just save it for when you need a Patreon thing or whatever.
Yeah, it will be coming to my patrons this month. But with Soulburner and Cyber Metal, I'm trying not to take away my own steam, I guess.
Yeah. It's easy. It's really easy to do.
I don't have a vanity URL for this game, so.
Yeah, that's, you know what, 3 minutes. I'll take it. thanks for listening, everybody. This has been the Brain Trust Podcast. We're going to get back to it. I know a lot of the episodes that we lied about in the beginning would have sounded wild, but we've just been really going through it.
They all sound like things we could have actually done that would have whipped.
Yeah, we're getting closer to being able to fake another Gen Con, so get ready for that. that'll be fun. Yeah, you can find all my stuff on Twitter at will_jobst. I am, like, booked through editing for the next month, but if you've got something that you want to collaborate on editing-wise, let me get in there with my little comments. That's... my co-host said that was pretty good and great. Go ahead, hit me up. That would be great. But otherwise, stay tuned for more Torque stuff, a Torque Jam, the new adventure, and then I'll be doing a cool limited playtest of Big Grave. So check that out. Adam, where can people find you?
I'm online at worldchamp.io, and I'm on Twitter at WCGameCo. Cyber Metal 2012 is still available at pentagram.city. And it looks rad.
It's so good. Cyber Metal is so good. Can I run like a campaign for you, yeah, Cyber Metal?
Gladly.
Great. I'll do it in the Brain Trust. Fuck it.
Yeah, hell yeah. a note to you, like, it's sort of designed for like drop in, drop out, like. It would be really great in the Brain Trust, where our gang is the Brain Trust, and, like, these four people are there this week, but you're all part of the same gang.
Yes, okay.
Because I made note, one of the edits was, you only gain XP if you are present during the session where your gang does stuff, because that was the intent of, like, oh, you know, Reggie the Skull Crusher is not here this week because... they're going to play their other mission next week, but they're still in our gang.
Totally. Yeah.
But then I did change it so that everyone levels up equally so that you can still, so your gang levels up together, basically.
It's like when Tony brings a new gadget to the Bing upstairs, and everyone kind of. What does he do that with? Like, he brings something that people start using. There's the fish obviously comes that... in and affects everyone who walks in.
Yeah, it's an eldritch item for sure.
Yeah. Oops.
But pentagram.city for cyber metal and dying.day for soul burner, which is live from April 5th to April 22nd. So if you're listening, it's probably now, and it's going to be a wild ride.
Yeah, I'll make sure this goes up on that day. I think that's a Tuesday, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Great. This will be up then. Yeah, go to dying.day right now and back. Give your tithe.
It's watch time. The video.
The video is so good. There's a fucking sword in it.
Yeah, it's sick. Watch it. It doesn't really inform what the game is except for the vibe.
Except everything. Yeah. Yeah. I asked Adam about the sword and they were like, yeah, it was in the ground before. The sword was Arthurianly impaled in the ground. Anyway, thanks for listening. Dying.day. Check it out. And otherwise, come hang out with the Brain Trust. We have a Discord. And like I said, gonna run cyber metal. That'd be fun. And brain emoji, handshake emoji.